Our guest today is Gunter Pauli. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you are here because you've written an extraordinary new book about which we will speak in a minute, but it's called The Blue Economy. And tell us the subtitle.
Well, the subtitle is very simple, 100 innovations that in 10 years will generate 100 million jobs.
Whoa. But first, let's start with your background. You're Belgian, and you years ago started a really groundbreaking company called Ecovair.
That's right.
So tell us a little about why your company was so different from everyone else and why it was needed so badly.
Well, you know, we had these amazing experiences in Europe where rivers started to look like huge soap fields. I mean, the foam was just growing and growing and growing, and we realized that we were using soaps that did a good job in cleaning, but they were not easy biodegradable. That meant they kept on cleaning the fishes and the frogs for weeks to go, and as a result, there was a need to bring in a new product, a biodegradable product. And so I had no background in chemistry. I had no background in fast-moving consumer goods, but I said, I'm going to bring a product on the market that will be at least 1,000 times more biodegradable than the standard today. And I want to not only have a biodegradable product, I want it to be manufactured in a factory that is biodegradable itself. So at the end of its life, you could take it apart and do something else with it. And so we did. And we took 3% of the market without advertising. I was paying my workers $0.50 a mile to ride the bicycle to work. All my car fleet of the company in 91 was running on biofuels. So we're a bit ahead of our times.
Yes.
But then when I went to Indonesia to look at our suppliers in 93, I realized that I was responsible for the destruction of the rainforest.
Because in trying to use biodegradable products, you were using palm oil, and then what happened?
And so the palm oil, I was using a palm oil, our market share was growing, we needed more palm oil, and our suppliers, when we met them, said, you know, we're going to tear down about 800,000 hectares of rainforest in order to supply you and your future competitors biodegradable soaps. And then I realized that biodegradability is not the same as sustainability.
And so when they plowed down their old growth forests, they destroyed the habitat for the orangutan.
All of that.
And other unforeseen consequences. As Gore Vidal says, no good deed goes unpunished.
Exactly. So it is, I had the best of intentions in the world, but I did not make the connection. I did not see the unintended consequences. And that is what made me think about the next business model. Because I had created by then already 6 enterprises. So, entrepreneur at heart, quite successful in the business, I said, but these business models are not going to do the contribution to our societies, our communities, and our earth the way we should do it.
Well, one thing about the soap that most people don't realize is that 1/3 of the toxic pollution in a normal home is from the cleaning products.
Because we want to kill all the bugs, and we change the tension of the water. Now, when you change the tension of the water, then molecules can start moving over your skin and in your skin much faster than you could ever see it, never imagine it. And so what is happening is we're changing the physics of our environment. And if we change the physics, we're changing the base conditions of life.
Well, I want to bring it up to the current situation with the big oil spill, because most people use regular detergents, which are a petroleum product, to get the petroleum, the oil, off these poor birds. What did you do about that?
Well, we got an award in 93 for having special soaps developed for the birds that are covered with oil slick. And because when you cleanse the bird with these quite effective but rather aggressive soaps, you're actually taking all the wax of the bird. And when the bird goes next time into water, bloom, dies. Because from coldness, from water penetrating up to the skin, normally they're fully covered against, they're beautifully waxed. So we developed a special soap that was made out of sugars. Alkyl polyglucoses for the experts, APGs. And so we made these, and so we could take off the slick, the oil slick, and we leave the wax on. And that was one of the products I had wanted to introduce, but faith decided differently.
Well, you talk about the natural world, and in this book there are so many wonderful ideas, brilliant ideas that are found in nature that people have been able to extend into commercial and humanitarian uses. For example, the question about mosquito bites. How come you always feel an injection, but you don't feel it when the mosquito is biting you?
Exactly.
What about this Japanese scientist?
Well, the beauty is that the Japanese ask themselves, how come this simple mosquito is always disliked by everyone for their biting, but there something is happening there that we really should know about. And what we have looked at that case and the other 90 cases in the book is that nature knows how to use physics. It is the geometrical shape of the proboscis that allows it to have, with its conical shape, a no-pain entry into the skin. Today, all the needles for diabetes patients in Japan are shaped according to the proboscis.
The mosquito proboscis, yeah.
And it's fantastic. I mean, everyone is scared to get a little shot, and the first time it's very scary, it's traumatic for a kid. But hey, just borrowing that physical shape of a cone versus a cylinder allows you to be able to have the needed medicine without pain.
I love these examples so much. If we could just talk about a couple more. The bombardier beetle.
Oh, yes.
That propels its toxic fumes at its enemy, the ants.
I mean, beating the ants, beating a colony of ants, you got to be smart to be able to do that. I mean, it's just not given to anyone. And so it has this capacity, again, with pure physical forces, to propel a gas over the ants at 10 times its own distance. Now, it's a tiny little animal. It's a tiny little insect. But to propel a gas coming out of its guts, I mean, I tell you, you talk to kids about it, they get excited. They want to know how this works. And of course, it reminds them of other things human beings sometimes do when they get too much gas in their intestines. But the beauty of it is that this is now going to be translated into a new mechanism for asthma patients to be able to disperse into their lungs what before needed chemicals. So we're substituting the chemistry that actually was damaging the environment, mm-hmm. the ozone layer, that chemistry is being replaced by a pure physical formula coming from a little beetle that needs to defend itself against ants.
Now, from the little beetle to the gigantic whale, what have we learned from whales, particularly their heart and their ability to create electricity from just potassium, sodium, and chloride?
Exactly. But the most important thing with a whale is that the whale used to be a dog. And the whale went back to the ocean and turned into this huge animal that's 1,000 times bigger than the dog. Now, we got to remind us that the size and the shape and the form is all the same for the dog and the whale. But 1,000 times bigger. That means that the whale had to secure conductivity of the electric current that is generated 1,000 times faster. And that meant it had to get superconductive systems around its heart. And it did it by developing very simple cells. Now that is giving us the idea on how to replace the pacemaker. So the pacemaker is basically an irregular current, an irregular heartbeat that is then actually caused by heart tissue that is not conductive. So the scientists who've been studying the whale now make little carbon tubes, very similar to the tubes that the whale has made, and place them from a part of the tissue of the heart that is very conductive to that part of the heart that is not conductive, and we can put the regular beat in motion again. And you know what? No batteries are needed. We eliminate the surgery. We eliminate the battery. We eliminate the trauma. And now with a simple catheter, it can be placed right into the heart, and the whale is the one that gave us the recipe.
A couple more, because these are enchanting. The penguins.
Well, you know, the penguins are the ones who are teaching us how to desalinate water. And they have these special glands underneath their eyes. And these glands allow them to actually take salty water in the Antarctic and then just sneeze and the salt comes out. I mean, they have this incredible capacity to let it go through a little membrane, sneeze. Sneezes basically means put pressure on there. It's again a purely physical effect. I mean, it's like reverse osmosis, where we have a membrane and then we have to put on high pressure. Now, we need huge installations that cost a lot of money for it. The penguin does it simply by sneezing.
Ah, in the sea world, the chambered nautilus,
yeah.
Seaweed. I mean, there's so many things. Is there one or two more that you are fond of?
Well, you know, I think one of the greatest ones is something that you've seen the mountains all the time, the river. Rivers, when we throw some dirt in the river, somehow the river succeeds in cleansing it a couple of miles downstream. And scientists realize there's some very simple movement that is always being generated, the vortex.
Vortex.
And this vortex allows to take air out, and this vortex allows to put air in. Now, when you take air out of the water and you put air into the water, then you're promoting different type of bacteria. You're promoting the aerobes and the anaerobes. And so the anaerobes and the aerobes are stressed all the time. And so whatever there is as biological waste or even chemical waste, they just eat it. They just clean it up. Now, what is this useful for? First of all, we now have the first ice rink in America, in Telluride, that is going to be equipped with a vortex. And the vortex is going to take all the air out of the water. And as a result, they save 100,000 kilowatt hours of electricity because it needs less energy to make the ice and keep the ice. But better even, now you can see straight through the ice. Straight through. So the advertising remains visible. So now you have a new business model emerging, and that's what we want to do. We want to have an economy with a new business model. Instead of saying to the city of Telluride, you got to pay for this machine. Payback maybe a month, but now we say to the advertiser, your advertising, your logo is going to be visible much longer. You got to pay more per second of contact over TV to the audience that wants to see the hockey game. And therefore, you should install this. So the city gets it for free, saving money. And the advertiser gets better visibility for the logo. And as a result, win, 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 win. And what are we doing? We're just borrowing from the way a river works.
Well, I want to come back to your book, because anyone who's been entranced by these stories has to know there are so many more in here. But this book was originally written as a report to the Club of Rome. And the Club of Rome is, you can talk about it a little bit, but I want to mention that in 1972, the Club of Rome produced the best-selling environmental book in the history of the world, The Limits to Growth. And
correct.
Now I'm hoping the same for your book.
Well, thank you.
Tell us about the Club of Rome and what your mission is in a book like this.
Well, the Club of Rome was a group of top-notch politicians, very well-placed business people, scholars, scientists, members of academies.
World leaders,
sciences.
Mikhail Gorbachev, Trudeau of Canada.
That's right. So they got together and they said, the way the world is going, it seems to be doing good, but we're going to hit a brick wall sometime soon. We have to make connections amongst our industrial growth, our population growth, our consumption of energy, our environmental pollution, and our health conditions. And there was Jay Forrester at MIT who developed a very special software program, Systems Dynamics, and that they were able to see for the first time what happens if we continue on this growth path, and the pollution, and the health, and the So they put it into a complex analysis, and they said there are limits to growth, with a model that was used in the 60s. So I, in the 70s, was a leader of the students in Belgium. And as a student leader, it was the 70s, not the 60s anymore. So I wasn't there anymore being against everything and wanted to, you know, just retire in India. I wanted to be the new kind of entrepreneur and business person. I didn't want to go and work for the big companies. I wanted to be the one creating new business models, very much influenced by the Club of Rome. Because the president of the Club of Rome was the president of Fiat and Olivetti, two huge companies in those days in Europe. So what I want to do with the book is that we have seen for years the bad news. It keeps on coming at us. And I said, no, we will have to inspire young people to be able to imagine a much better world. as entrepreneurs. And I don't make a distinction between the social entrepreneur and the business entrepreneur, because whatever entrepreneurship is about, it has to include social and ecological from day one. How could you do something that is not social and ecological at the same time while making money? And so I needed to think about, how do we redefine competitiveness? How do we have a business model whereby we're not asking consumers to pay more to be green, where we're not asking angel investors to take lower returns because it's green, where we're not asking the government to pay subsidies and increase taxes so we can live environmental. I'm saying, let's embrace the innovations that have been benchmarked and that are known, and let's just expose these innovations to millions of young people around the world, and they will create the new business models. And that's what we want to do.
Well, there's a whole lot of, I have actually some vocabulary questions. Why is this the blue economy? Why is it not the green economy?
Because the earth is blue. You look at this beautiful earth from the outside in the universe, she is blue. The blue sky, the blue ocean. I mean, green refers to chlorophyll, and that's the trees. Now, a lot of people have done a lot of great work to get the green economy going. But if you ask people to pay more and investors to get less return, it's going to remain a fringe. You have to embrace a new business model. So what we're saying, for example, in the book is, instead of going from a toxic battery to a green battery, we say no battery.
Yeah.
So if you say no battery, you've changed the business model. That means your cell phone, your MP3 player, your pacemaker, all of that without a battery. Now, if we don't have the battery, we don't have the smelting, we don't have the mining, and we don't have the recycling anymore. Now, recycling is expensive. We know we got to do it. But what if we all have cell phones without batteries? And the first one is already working for 7 months in Germany. And it works with our body heat. And it works with the pressure of our voice. When I'm speaking into this microphone, I'm exerting a pressure. And that pressure is converted to electricity. It's called piezoelectricity. Now, that electricity today is commercially viable for a cell phone. Now, not only are we now saving the battery, we don't need chargers anymore. We lose all the time our chargers somewhere in the world. So we don't have to buy a second charger. We don't need a charger in our car anymore. So we're getting rid of all the paraphernalia around that cell phone. We keep it simple. Now, that is what natural systems teach us. Keep it simple. If you keep it simple, you're more competitive. If you're more competitive, then you are more innovative.
Well, you come to Santa Fe to speak for the Permaculture Credit Union's 10th year anniversary, and you come just having met with some of the most extraordinary minds of our time. Who did you see in San Francisco?
Well, the book launch in San Francisco was together with Fritz of Capra, the author of the Tao of Physics.
The Tao of Physics. And you just were at the Rocky Mountain Institute with...
Yeah, Amory Lovins invited me to talk to all his staff and bring the somewhat crazy and out-of-the-box ideas, but a third of them in the book have been benchmarked. A third of them, we can say, if you don't believe we can regenerate a rainforest from a savanna that was destroyed by cattle farming over decades, come and see, we got the project. It's running, it's doing well, it's generating jobs, it is actually providing drinking water, it's generating the fuels we need. And this is not a bunch of hippies getting together. This is about people dedicated to have a future for their kids. It is about, what can we do to secure that we respond to the basic needs of all on this earth with what we have? And that is perhaps the most important thing. There's so much we do, so much we want to do, Lorraine, with what we don't have. So we're saying, let's be inspired with what we have. And it's all around us. We just got to be inspired.
Is that sustainability?
For me, that is exactly sustainability. Sustainability is the capacity to respond to the basic needs of all with what you have. Now, in natural systems, if we look at evolution, everything goes from scarcity to abundance. This is fantastic. This is paradise that is always organized. Even in the Namib Desert, there is abundance for the lichens. They have abundance. And abundance is achieved by having more diversity. Now, that is the key. We get more diversity. Now, who brings diversity? Well, entrepreneurs can do that. You can use that same technology of the vortex and apply it in 37 different areas. You start with 37 businesses. Now, therefore, we need the next generation of entrepreneurs.
Well, you are the founder and director of something called ZERI, Z-E-R-I. Yeah. Tell us about it, please.
Well, in 1991, just when I started my factory, I wrote an article saying we have to go for zero waste and zero emissions. We're the only species on Earth capable of making something no one desires, waste. We waste waste. In natural systems, whatever is waste for one is nutrient for someone else. So I said we have to design business models that has no more waste, no more emissions. In 1994, when I had sold my business to my partner in Belgium, then the Japanese government was getting ready for the Kyoto Protocol. And the Japanese government said, we need an entrepreneurial mind to lead a team of scientists to design the business model that has zero waste and zero emissions. And I was the lucky one, and I was invited to come to Japan and had a team of 82 academics, not being an academic myself. And that gave me such an exposure to the opportunities to say, well, if we want to rethink mining, how could we do mining without emissions? And of course, 81 of the professors would say, not possible. I only needed one who said, I got an idea. Uh-huh. And I would say, focus. What can we do to make your idea benchmarked, tested? And so today in the book, we have the first technologies where we see how we can take 400 million tons of e-waste, all the old computers and electronics that we have, we crush it into dust. And with a simple film, we can go through it and we take out all the metals one by one at ambient temperature and pressure. And that technology is inspired how bacteria have been focusing on very specific metals they need to be able to live. We also need iron, and we need a little bit of copper, and so we have a symbiosis with those species who teaches us how to get the copper out and the iron out. Now, that is now put on a film, and you can just go through it and take it up. So, for 3 years, I was exposed to one idea after the other, and the scientists kept on providing. So in 96, when we were getting ready for Kyoto, I decided to put all the knowledge, with the support of the Japanese government and the United Nations, into a foundation called Zero Emissions Research and Initiatives. Because we were not ready to just do the research, we wanted to implement.
Uh-huh. One of the things, as you talk about this kind of cascading systems design, which is that you have a system input here, the output is waste, but that is then the input for another system. That's the raw material. And
exactly.
Then the output, the waste output of that is raw material for yet another. It's a magnificent model.
Well, everyone is doing it around the world. Every living critter on this earth is doing it, except one.
Hmm. Yeah.
Us.
Uh-huh.
But we can learn, if I have my cup of coffee, and I know that 99.8% of my coffee is wasted, because I will only ingest 0.2%, then I know I can press that coffee waste together, I can inoculate it with shiitake, and I can farm shiitake. And then when I've harvested the shiitake...
Those are mushrooms. Yeah.
There's a mushroom, uh-huh. A very healthy mushroom. Now, that shiitake leaves waste behind. And that waste is rich, so rich in amino acids, that we can take something that you could never have fed to the chickens or the pigs, you can now feed it to your pigs. And so we have coffee, we have mushrooms, and we have animal feed. Three cash flows.
Yes, yes.
And we thought it was waste. And so we said we can do that with our biological wastes, but let's take now a bottle, a glass bottle. We know we have done so much to try to recycle bottles. But turning a bottle back into a bottle is like asking a tree to take the leaves from the fall and put them back on in the spring. Doesn't work. It's too expensive. So we have been trying to make bottles out of bottles, and that's too expensive. So without taxation, it doesn't work. And I don't like taxes. We are all happy to pay a little bit of taxes to contribute to our communities, but we're not willing to be taxed to death. So what I'm saying is that, well, if you take now the glass bottles, you crush them, you inject it with CO2, then you make a building material, And that building material is better than steel and reinforced concrete. And that building material is actually inspired by the multifunctionality of nature. In nature, everything has multiple functions. Nothing is done for one purpose only. And so when you have that glass foam with CO2 embedded in it, you can actually build with it. It is an insulation material. No rats will go through it. No molds will ever grow in it. And no water will come through. So I got five functions in one product.
We're almost out of time, and one of the most wonderful things you do, and we could talk for so long, your work with Gunter's Fables and with children, because as Dr. Goodall does, Jane Goodall with her Roots and Shoots, her outreach into the young people to teach them new ways of thinking and to empower them. What are you doing with young people?
Well, having kids myself, I just wonder how can I bring that whole body of knowledge to kids, and they don't have to wait till they're 18 or 20 to read a book that's a bit too scientific for them. So the only way that I could do it is tell them stories, fables. So I wrote 36 fables, and these 36 fables bring 1,500 scientific subjects to the kids without talking science. And they will know and understand, why does a zebra have black and white stripes? How does the water get in the coconut? I mean, no one is pumping the water up into the coconut. And the apple falls down from the tree, but the apple had to get up in the tree before it could subject itself to the law of gravity. And they don't teach it in school. So bringing that body of questions, not answers, body of questions to the kids, and give them hints through illustrations, through some words that we play with, the kids start imagining, and they find the solutions.
Well, I you have sparked my imagination so much. I want to show this book again, the Blue Economy. I think that people will have just their minds opened up when they look at all the possibilities that you've set forth there. I'd like to thank our guest today, Gunter Pauli. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.